Blog Talk Radio.
I want to know, are you ready? America. Thanks for joining us. I want to know, are you ready to take back our country? As the name of this song states, are you ready to join together on common ground? By that I mean God, family, country, constitution. If so, you've tuned into the right place. If not, hang out with us. You may find there's more right in you than you know. I'm Gary Benford, host of United Patriots Uprising, coming to you every other Monday night for 2 hours of guest-driven, conservative-based political talk. It's all about the message, friends, looking to enlighten, edify, and equip, so each and every one of us will be able to engage, expose, and defeat the radical left's Marxist agenda in the arena of ideas, leading to a red tsunami at the polling places. So are you with me, America? If so, strap on your helmet and take up your shield, because we're in a war for the soul of our nation, and we're not about to lose. Socialism, not in our America, not on our watch. No way, no shape, no how. That's 347-637-3942, and I think I just got on the air, so I'll say it one more time. Welcome, everybody, to United Patriots Uprising, another episode where we get into the truth from the conservative side and the Christian side. 347-637-3942 is the number if you want to talk to us. And normally I start out with a monologue, but we have such a power-packed, explosive show with some people that are going to really come on and give you a lot of knowledge. We're going to just hit the ground running right away. I'll get into my monologue if there's even time for it later down the line. So we're going to bring my first guest on right here and right now. And he's an author, a columnist, an on-air TV host, executive director and senior producer of Providence Forum, which is a division of Dr. D. James Kennedy's ministries. And I got to tell you about Dr. D. James Kennedy. When I got saved back in 1997, the influences that led me into Christianity, some, and some into conservatism, included Rush Limbaugh, Monica Crowley, Mark Levin, and Dr. D. James Kennedy, who I watched religiously, his Coral Ridge Hour and his Truth That Transformed. So I've seen Dr. Jerry Newcomb for quite a while. He's also the senior producer and on-air host for Truth That Transformed, which was formerly the Coral Ridge Hour, Dr. D. James Kennedy's ministry. He's produced or co-produced more than 70 one-hour television specials that have been aired nationwide. He's also the author or co-author of 31 books, including two bestsellers, George Washington's Sacred Fire, which he co-authored with Dr. Peter Laubach, and What If Jesus Had Never Been Born? I have that one, which he co-authored with Dr. Kennedy. He's appeared as a guest on a multitude of television programs, including the Trinity Broadcast Network, C-SPAN, Fox News, Fox Business News, and I'm going to have to ask him about his appearance on Politically Incorrect with Bill Maher. Got to find out about that one. He's also the host of a weekly radio show, Vocal Point, which is on the Grace Net Radio. He's got his BA in history from Tulane, the Green Wave. His MA with honors from Wheaton Graduate School and his doctorate of ministry from Knox Theological Seminary. I'm sure you know a lot of people who have come from there. I'm so pleasantly happy and glad to have on this show Dr. Jerry Newcomb.
Well, thank you, Jerry. I feel humbled, actually, listening to all that stuff. Who are you talking about?
I'm just talking about a person that I have watched on the TV for so long and watching you coming on and introduced. And as I told you when I asked you to please come on the show, after I got saved, I saw Curtis Bowers on that show. And at that particular time, I was probably only going to, on Truth to Transform, I was probably only going to try and just be a good Christian, a follower of Jesus, born again, a follower of Jesus. But when I saw Curtis, that's the first time that I ever heard about Marxism and what was going on in the underbelly of this country. And that's when I got involved back in the late 1990s. So my first question to you, Dr. Newcomb, we were in a spot. There was a place in which you could say Merry Christmas. There was a place in which God had a place at the table, at the workplace. In the government, there was a time in which people respected, children respected their parents, people respected the police. There was tolerance, but that didn't necessarily mean that you had to agree with somebody. You just said you have the right to be what you want to be. Now look at where we are. We're on the verge of full-blown communism. How did this happen?
Well, I think the short answer is we've forgotten God. That's why all these things have happened. You know, there's a great anecdote I love to tell that when Solzhenitsyn, who was the great chronicler of the disaster that was communism, all the millions and millions of people, human beings killed in the name of what they thought was a good idea, but obviously it was a terrible idea. But anyway, he said when he was young, he heard some peasants arguing in the aftermath of the Russian Revolution. And one of them said, you know, it's because we've forgotten God. That's why all these things have happened. And Solzhenitsyn said, I wrote books on the Soviet Union. I read tons of books about the Soviet Union. And he said, nobody encapsulated the real reason better than that peasant and some other peasants that were basically agreeing with him. And the idea that we have forgotten God. And you know what? Solzhenitsyn was able to say that at Harvard in 1978, and he was booed. And he said that really wounded him, that he was booed at Harvard for saying such a simple truth. And, of course, Harvard was founded for the glory of God. The original motto of Harvard in Latin was truth for Christ and the church. The Reverend John Harvard is still memorialized in the campus. You go there today, you see his statue, and he's a Puritan minister, and he's got a big, gigantic open Bible right there on his lap. And people rub his foot for good luck or whatever, you know, the statue or the foot. But the bottom line is, it was those ideas that created such institutions as Harvard and Princeton and frankly, the United States of America. The Christian roots of America are so strong when you look at the facts of history, but we've forgotten all this, and we've become so sophisticated. Not really, but we pretended to be. And in the process, this is why we're heading down the road, as you say, towards socialism and then on the way to communism.
Yeah, and you know, the statue of Harvard up there, I hate to tell him, I know, if Frederick Douglass, they're going to take his statue down upstate New York, and they're pulling down everybody else's statue, I don't know how long Mr. Harvard is going to stand up there. But as you know, all those Ivy League schools were founded on Judeo-Christian principles, and also are all their mottos, and they've all just turned around and gone the opposite direction. In your opinion, Dr. Newcomb, where are we right now with the Democrats finally getting back in and having the House and the Senate? I'm sure God isn't through with us, so he's not giving up on us because we didn't give up on them. We did not vote this guy in. I truly believe 83 million people voted for Donald Trump, you know, and this election was stolen. And I think that is on the process of being proven. But because of that, because we did not win, we stood up for God, family, country, and Constitution. I really truly believe that God is going to help us out here. But where do we stand? Where are we right now? And how bad is the situation with them having the House, the Senate, the presidency, and also seemingly control of Supreme Court after what happened with Justice Roberts and some of these last decisions.
Well, yeah, and they also want to even pack the court. That would be one of the schemes that they would have, which would mean that they would actually have more members on the U.S. Supreme Court than just the nine that have been there for 100-something years. I mean, a long, long time. But I think it's a terrible thing. I think, frankly, what happened was, obviously, the irregularities, to put the nicest phrase on what happened in election 2020, all those irregularities. But the Democrats received no mandate in the elections, but they're acting as if the American people spoke and they had this huge landslide, you know, in favor of Biden and all the things that he's trying to do. Take an example. This is real close to my heart because I care about history, because history matters. What we teach the next generation a lot of times, you know, ends up being expressed later on. We see all these Marxists in the streets tearing down statues, even of Frederick Douglass, an abolitionist. And the average person tearing that down that statue probably has no idea what an abolitionist means, one who opposed slavery. But anyway, bottom line is recently there's this controversy involving something called the 1619 Project, where this is a product of the New York Times, and there's a curriculum now that's been developed out of this. The idea of the 1619 Project is that America's real beginnings were not 1776, but rather 1619. What happened then? Well, that's when the first African slaves were brought in to America, to the American colonies, specifically in Jamestown. So a year before the Pilgrims came, the first African-American or African slaves were brought in. And what the 1619 Project essentially is holding is that America's history is so wrapped up in the slavery issue that we wouldn't have America the slaves. Well, they certainly made contributions. I mean, for example, they were forced against their will to build up the city of Washington, D.C., and examples like that. And all of this is very tragic. But the fact of the matter is, you know, there was a major, major civil war fought over the issue of states' rights, but it morphed into the issue of slavery. And when it morphed into the issue of slavery, it was like, okay, England can no longer support the Confederacy. They were considering it, but they wouldn't do it once the Emancipation Proclamation came out in 1862, promised to go into effect in 1863, which it did. But the bottom line is that the founders, for all their faults, personally and, you know, in terms of the politics, they created the framework by which slavery and other evils like that could one day be uprooted. And that's what really counts. People risk their lives, Gary, to come to this country. Even to this day, they do. They risk their lives. Why? Because of the freedom that this country promises and gives out. And things like the 1619 Project basically says, no, America is so hopelessly racist even from the beginning, it's not even worth, you know, continuing, tear it all down and then build some new Marxist utopia in the future. And, you know, Marxist utopias have been tried all over the place, and they brought nothing but disaster and death and, you know, just awful what they brought. But people don't know because they don't know their history. So I totally agree with Mitch McConnell and his opposition to this 1619 Project. It should not have any place in the American schools. But the administration wants it as if this is, you know, what kids need to learn today. And I just think it's an incredible tragedy. There was a battle over history, and it mattered.
You're right about that, and there are three things that I watched going on. The first thing, they tried Marxism, and I know you know what that is. You know, Karl Marx, first thing he had to do, first thing he told you have to get rid of Jesus Christ. You have to neuter the church because people are either going to serve a benevolent God or government, but not both. It's going to be one or the other. And by the way, God would have it no other way. Either you bow down to his sovereignty or you can take Big Daddy government, but he's not going to play ball with you unless you bow down to him. So he had to, and then he had to take away the guns. Okay, he had to take away the guns. So when people find out that you're in a socialist state that you want to get your country back, you can't get them out because they've gotten rid of your weapons. Then they tried this cultural Marxism. Political correctness is part of it. This is what's going on, you know. And then they tried to change the language and everything, and tried to work that, and they've worked that to some success. But now They found out that didn't go all the way. So I think this is the last straw, trying this initiative to try and say, because it's all based on getting rid of the Constitution, since they can't get rid of it, let's try and get rid of it by saying it's illegitimate at its base because it was written not under the auspice of God, but written by racist founding fathers. So we're going to ignore this whole thing and try and start over with the Saul Alinsky, Barack Obama, you know, George Soros version of America. No, we won't. Yeah, go ahead. You can comment.
No, I just want to, add something real fast because some of the key founding fathers were from Virginia. And of course, Virginia, you know, obviously had slavery. It had, as Dr. Peter Lilback, with whom I wrote the book, George Washington's Sacred Fire, notes, he said, look, George Washington was born into a fourth generation family where slavery was the norm. By the time he died, out of Christian convictions, George Washington freed his slaves. Today, you know, in our politically correct milieu, we get no credit for that. But, you know, imagine that. If you were born, Gary, into a situation where, you know, you've made such a radical, abrupt change, even by the time you died, you know, saying this is not the way we should go in America. George Washington loved the Bible. One of his favorite Bible verses was, every man shall sit under his own vine and fig tree. He imagined a, you know, a place where we would have the freedom and you know, for our own decisions and so forth, a freedom under God. And what's happened today is they've taken away God, and now they're taking away our freedoms, doing that sometimes in the name of the slavery issue. But there's one thing about slavery that most people don't know, and I want to say this. This is really important. In 1774, in the Virginia House of Burgesses, George Washington, Patrick Henry, Thomas Jefferson, and other key founding fathers of America, they came up with something called the Fairfax Resolve. You've heard of Fairfax County. This is the same area. And the purpose of the Fairfax Resolve was, let's abolish this evil slave trade. You know, once this goes into effect, no more slaves are allowed to, you know, come in from Africa or from the West Indies or whatever. We will not allow that in Virginia. Well, this was a great step in the right direction. Unfortunately, George III, the king, abolished that. He put the kibosh on the Fairfax Resolve, and, you know, he said, there's slavery in my kingdom. You know, you have no right to do this. This is interesting because William Wilberforce, living around that time, later on, he was a strong Christian member, he was a member of Parliament, and he, not single-handedly, but with a coterie of like-minded friends and associates, they worked real hard, but he in particular, for about 50 years, because of their Christian convictions, to fight first the slave trade in Great Britain and the British Empire, and secondly, slavery itself in the British Empire. And I think that crusade was so successful, but it had not been successful yet by 1774 when King George III put the kibosh on the Fairfax Resolve. Another thing, if I could, do I have enough time for real fast about slavery? Because slavery is such an important issue. It keeps coming up.
Well, what I'd like to do, Dr. Newcomb, if it's all right with you, I'd like to bring you back. And when you can have more time and really bear down into some of these things, okay, if you don't mind, because I do have a couple other questions that are very important to ask you. The important question to ask you is this. When I got saved, you know, your pastor, Dr. D. James Kennedy, the late Dr. Kennedy, so dear to my heart, because he was the only pastor I saw on TV that brought God and government together, that talked about God's family, country, constitution. I got it from him. Please tell us why. And your people saying, Brother Benford, you know, you don't mix politics and religion. And I said, but God is truth. All truth comes from God, and God is interested in government. Please tell us about the ministry of D. James Kennedy, why he was like why he was the way he was, seeing politics being an essential part. Is it important that we as believers, those of us who are followers of Jesus Christ, become aware and involved in the process, and how that ties in with the ministry that you're involved in now?
Well, I asked him one time, what was it that got him so conservative on these points? And he said what really concerned him was when he read a book called Witness. Witness was a book by Whitaker Chambers, who at one time was had a major role with Time magazine. He must have been quasi-conservative back then. But Whitaker Chambers at one time was a communist and fellow traveler with the Marxists and so forth, and then had a falling out when he began to see, you know, look at what Stalin is doing. Look at the evil that's being unleashed here through the communist movement. And so anyway, Whitaker Chambers wrote this book called Witness, and he eventually testified against a communist spy, and that guy got put away, Alger Hiss, and they, you know, redeemed Alger Hiss's reputation, but he was guilty of being a communist and passing on spy, you know, information to the Soviets. So anyway, I think in some ways, by reading that book, Witness, which, by the way, is a Christian book, because part of Whitaker Chambers' conversion, you know, out of the delusion of communism, was through faith in Jesus Christ. So that book is what changed him. Whitaker Chambers' Witness. I think I've seen like a list from World Magazine or other sources where they said something like, you know, what are the most 100 influential Christian books of the 20th century? Maybe it wasn't just books, period. And that was definitely in that list. Witness, Whitaker Chambers.
So that started Dr. Kennedy on the path, and you were the host of Truth is Transformed. We've always seen you on the air. And please tell us about the ministry now, what you've been doing, about how this has branched out. I tithe to the ministry every month. I get the resources. I get the DVDs on communism, on socialism, on what the founding fathers did. I think it's a great resource, people. And before Jerry leaves, he's going to give you the website where you can see what they do and information and where you can find them in their television shows. But please tell them what you do with your ministry and the whole scope of this, because you have a Christian side, it looks like, and you also have a political side.
Well, we are first and foremost a media ministry, and the media that we use primarily is television, and then we get that, you know, broadcast on television, but then there's also internet avenues by which we get that out. And there's also a print side to the media ministry, so print media, and we published a magazine. I wouldn't even necessarily call it a magazine. It's more like a beautiful full-color newsletter called Impact. That's a monthly publication. But a lot of the specials we make are not like, you know, how to feel good and how to have a positive attitude in Christ and so forth. And there's a place, you know, we all need positive thinking if it's Christian-oriented. You know, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me and so forth. It's better to, all things being equal, it's better to be positive in Christ because we know who's going to win, Christ. Okay, but going back, in the meantime, here we are in this culture today where there's so many incredible things going on, and so we see our ministry alerting people to some of this stuff and trying to connect the dots and show people some of the things that are going on. One of our big specials we made recently was about George Soros and how he's spending all this money essentially to tear down America as founded and fund a lot of these riots in the streets and so forth. And it's amazing. So anyway, we've made specials about that, specials about religious liberty. Right now I'm working on a Memorial Day program, and it's going to include some of the ways in which the current administration is trying to, you know, expurgate from the military Christian people or conservative people, you know, which is amazing. Bill Federer, my good friend, who's a great author and speaker, he points out that there was a Roman emperor just before God raised up Constantine to sit on the throne of Caesar. This Roman emperor, Diocletian, persecuted Christians terribly. He persecuted them. And one of the things Diocletian did was first he took the military and he drove out of the military all known Christians. He just completely expurgated them. You know what's interesting about him is that he did all these things. In effect, while he was emperor, he said, "You worship Jesus Christ over my dead body." Well, eventually he died.
He died.
And they took his tomb And eventually a church was made, cathedral or whatever, was made using the tomb of Diocletian as the cornerstone. My dad actually worshipped in that church. It's in what the country that used to be called Yugoslavia. And my dad worshipped there, and we were talking about Diocletian, and I said, do you know who that was? And he said, no, was that some sort of saint? I said, no, Dad, that was an anti-Christian guy. He said, you worship Jesus Christ over my dead body. And then here we are thousands of years later, and you did. You worship Jesus Christ over Diocletian's dead body.
There you go. There you go. Dr. Newcomb, you know, please tell people how they can reach you, and I hope you'll come back where I can give you more time. And, you know, we wanted to introduce you to our audience, and I hope you'll be willing to come back. But please tell people how they can reach you and get your resources.
Well, I put links to all the things that I'm doing with the ministry and the radio, the books and so forth at GaryNewcomb.com, NEWCOMBE. And we're thankful to say that D. James Kennedy Ministries continues, djameskennedy.org. And we now even have the Providence Forum part of it, which was founded by Dr. Peter Loback, and he basically gifted it to the ministry so we would continue, and we're adding media parts to the Providence Forum work. It's basically, let's get to understand our Christian roots as a nation, because we've forgotten God and we need to get back to him.
Thank you very much, people. Please check the website out. This is a wonderful resource. I've been using it for years. Once again, Dr. Jerry Newcomb, thanks for coming on the show.
Okay, thank you. God bless.
God bless. Dr. Jerry Newcomb, everybody. And I'm telling you, the D. James Kennedy Ministry has for years, ever since I became a Christian back in 1997, has blended God and government because they go together.
Yes.
They go together. And now, this is going to be fun. And I know God has to be with this particular woman, because she's a native New Yorker who, after the collapse of her parents' marriage, was raised by her mother. In poverty, they got by. But this is going way, way back in the day. Barbara from Harlem's mother was a hard worker who didn't depend on the government, didn't want shelter and food from the government. So when Barbara became of voting age, what did she do? As a young married woman, she did exactly what I did as a young single black man. Like the majority of blacks do, she became a Democrat.
Yes.
Not questioning that old worn out off-base motto, the Democrats are the poor and Republicans are for the rich. Well, guess what? Barbara eventually began listening to theologian who? The person we were just speaking about, the late Dr. D. James Kennedy, and that's where Jerry Newcomb's ministry was with Dr. Kennedy, and her thought process began to change, even though she was a member of several Harlem-based Democratic Party clubs, including one with Charles Rangel. Oh, my God. Now, the final straw for Barbara was interesting. When blacks in her circle of influence tried to justify O.J. Simpson getting off from, you know, the rap of murdering his wife simply because he was black. That was it for Barbara. She began voicing her voice, newfound opinions on radio programs, Jay Diamond, Mark Levin. She worked for Rudy Giuliani when he was running for mayor. She's involved in several other ventures that she'll tell us about, and one of them is her own talk show, which I listened to Saturday, hosted along with her daughter, Bebe Diamond, called Our Urban Story, where they discuss present political issues and concerns about the state of America. I am so happy to bring Barbara from Harlem on, mainly because she is living proof that if she can do it, so can you. You don't have to stay on the Democratic plantation, especially if you call yourself a follower of the Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. Welcome to the show, Barbara.
Well, thank you, thank you, thank you. That was some introduction. Boy, I said, this man knows me in and out. He knows my comings and my goings. Thank you so much for that wonderful introduction.
Well, thank you for coming on, and thank you for being who you are, because I can relate to you, because until 1997, when I was around 47 years old, I think, I was a Democrat, and I was following the crowd, and I just thought the Democratic Party was for us. But then when I found out what God thought about abortion, what God thought about same-sex marriage, what God thought about, you know, what God thought about wealth redistribution, that you're supposed to take and keep the fruits of your labor, and you get rewarded for diligence in work and slothfulness. You don't work, you don't eat. So,
That's right. And the thing started to change.
And Barbara, then I go into the church, because at that point I was still in a church with a predominantly black congregation. I said, hey, you're voting wrong. Nobody wanted to hear it. Is that what you went through?
Almost definitely. Most definitely. And as a matter of fact, some of the churches that I've been going to and entering into, they don't even want to hear the word of God. You know, I'll ask somebody in the church, well, when they start talking about slavery, I said, well, you know, we always say God is good, and someone says all the time. Now, answer me this. Was God good during slavery? And usually that it doesn't get an answer. They usually walk away from me and stop speaking to me. When it comes to the truth of the word of God, how God hates the shedding, hands that shed innocent blood, they turn away from these things that are in the Bible, that are mandated by God, just so that they can be in line with the groupthink and the Democratic Party.
Barbara, how hard was it for you to break away? See, it wasn't hard for me to break away. At that time, by the way, I was a sports writer for Newsday and the New York Daily News. So I live here on Long Island. So I was into that New York scene. And then I managed recording artists, Dwayne D. Kerr, the Funky Flute Man, and D-Man's Music, who's in Erykah Badu's band. So I was in Harlem, and I was around that area a lot. I was used to just being around a lot of black people who were liberals. How did you, and I know I know your background, why were you able to break away? See, I was never a follower. I just, when it came to Jesus, I said, I'm following you. And that was it. I didn't care what they thought. I lost all my family, but hey, what can I do? I'm not giving him up.
That's how it goes. Well, you know, I thank God that my mother and my grandmother in particular introduced me to God, took me to church. And what I heard, particularly at Bethel AME Church in DeLand, Florida, when we would go down there, was love thy neighbor. So in these Democratic clubs that I was a member of, it was everything was about slavery. Everything was about hating white people because of slavery. And it contradicted what the Bible was telling me, to love thy neighbor. And I'm saying to myself, how can I hate people who have been dead for years and years and have to answer to God for what they did? So it had my personhood very much upset. I had to choose between what they were saying and what the Bible was teaching. And the Bible said, love thy neighbor. It didn't tell me to hate anyone because of the color of their skin. So it wasn't that hard for me to find peace within my soul and being in line with the word of God. And if being in line with the word of God means that you're rejecting me, so be it. I accepted it, and I went on my merry way.
How was the pushback? How much did you get?
Well, you know, I get people saying things that trying to define who I am, and, you know, they call your names, they ignore you. But it was worth it because I was at peace, and I knew I was in line with the word of God, and that meant more to me because God has the heaven to put me in. They don't.
There you go.
When
now,
I close my eyes, I want to be with my Savior. I won't even see those people, so I didn't even worry about it. I did what I knew I had to do and what I should do, walk away from it.
Amen. This is such a strong, powerful testimony. Now, I know your daughter, Bibi's probably sitting there saying, well, how come he didn't mention the book? I left that. I know. I did that on purpose. Okay.
Good.
Your book, Escaping the Racism of Low Expectations. Please tell us why you wrote the book and what the book is about.
Well, as I said, you know, I had trouble, really, not trouble, but my personhood was at odds with what the Democratic Party was producing and trying to get me to believe and what the Bible had to say. So this book, the guides for this book, My God, My Country, and My Conscience. When I wrote all of those, the contradictions that we're subjected to in the black community just because we're black. We're expected to jump onto the train of the Democratic Party, don't ask any questions, don't get any answers, and just stand up there on the corner, no justice, no peace, while other people come over to this country and utilize the opportunities and the advantages that they have here to make successful lives for themselves and their children. So I broke free of that because of the word of God. I knew that I couldn't serve God and be a faithful member of any club that's going to tell me or preach to me or try to get me to hate people because of things that happened in the past, which God allowed. And then reading the word of God made me realize that what man meant for evil, God meant for good. I compare our slavery, our ancestors' slavery, with that of Joseph. Joseph was sold into slavery by his own brothers. But yet and still, at the end of the story, Joseph tells his brother, you don't have to fear me. You don't have to think I'm going to get be revengeful towards you, because what you meant for evil, God meant for good. I was able to see, because of my Uncle Richie, the goodness that happened and the wonderful things that happened because of something as ugly as slavery. I, as a black woman, was born in the best country that God ever formed on this planet. I am proud to be an American. By whatever means necessary, he took and turned slavery into something that was beneficial for me and for millions of other people.
This is true, and this is what people that, and we have Brandon Tatum and Pierre Wilson coming up next, both from the Candace Owens Blexit organization, and the Red Pill. The Red Pill was changing from the Democratic plantation over to conservatism, and this was changing from the Democratic Party and slavery into the freedom of America that God intended it. That Constitution that the Democrats want to get out of there, that's what keeps us free, our freedom of speech. And what people don't understand, right, and I want you to talk about this, Barbara, what people don't understand, this is all coming from Satan, and the goal is not to take away our free speech. The goal is to stop us from talking about Jesus Christ is the only way to heaven.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. You know, it's not that they hate capitalism so much, because look at how they benefit from it. All of those that get up there with their ranting and raving, this is unfair, that is unfair. They stay here because of the capitalistic system, but they hate America's founding. They hate the Judeo-Christian founding of this nation. They hate God. I sum it up that way. They hate God. Everything that God has proclaimed, mandated, they try to alter in their own ways. And, you know, for instance, God says an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. They say, oh, it's too cruel to have capital punishment for a convicted murderer. But it's not too cruel to kill a baby in the womb. You see, their ideology, and not good for America, the only thing that they're trying to do, like redefining marriage, they're trying to take God out of our society. You know, one of our second president, John Adams, said our Constitution was made for a moral and religious people. It is wholly inadequate to the government of any other. And you see, when you become immoral, when you hate God, that Constitution is an obstacle to the controls and the power you want to have over other people. And they're very dangerous, and we must be aware of that. And we have to stay vigilant to fight that, stand up, and not let them destroy our Constitution or our freedoms and liberties.
This is you're right on point, Barbara. Barbara, how do you talk to people, especially liberals, regardless of their nationality? But blacks may probably create another problem, because they're going to say you're not down with the struggle, you're not a sister or something, and all that bull crap. But how do you talk to people now that are just so happy and so elated that Joe Biden's in the White House? And this is what's scary to me. Back 3 years ago, when I had three black friends, all college educated, all professional people that I've known a long, long time, and they claim they go to church and they raise their hand in the air and wave it like they just don't care and profess Jesus Christ, but they hated Trump. And all of them basically said, one said, I would rather live under communism than under a racist like Donald Trump. The other said, well, you've proven to me I'm a socialist because I would rather bring the white man down and bring the rich and the power down, and even if I don't get a piece of the pie, take a little bit away from them. And the third one said the same thing. I would rather live under socialism than Trump anytime when Trump just padded his 401k. How do you deal with these people, and what would you tell the audience how to deal with this type of attitude?
Well, one thing, you have to take a deep breath and do a lot of quiet praying for God to give you the words of wisdom that your adversaries cannot gain nor deny. Most of the time, well, I haven't run into that hostility. That's extreme hostility for those responses. But when I do run into them and ask, I've been asked, well, why are you voting for Trump? I can easily tell them in 1 Corinthians 10:31, my Bible tells me that whether I eat or drink or whatever I do, do all to the glory of God.
Amen.
How do I glorify God? At Proverbs 6, it says that God hates hands that shed innocent blood. I would be an accomplice to murder if I supported that, if I supported people of that nature. And most of the time, I either don't get an answer, don't get a response, but just prior to the election, I had some very good responses from that. In other words, a lady called me over the phone that, you know, that she met me over the radio years ago. And she converted, in a sense, from the, well, she said she wasn't voting for the Democratic Party after I just, you know, repeated those things and we had discussions about the Bible. She's a church-going lady. And she was able to convince three of her friends living there in a project in Brooklyn. I don't know where she lives or anything like that, but she said that she was able to talk to some of her friends and open up the can of worms party has presented to her and many million other blacks, and she was able to tell them why they shouldn't be voting for the Democratic Party. And I've done that. I do that quite often. In other words, I know several people that who were devoted Democrats. You see, I'm still a registered Democrat. People ask me, well, why do you remain a Democrat? Because when I open my mouth, one of the first things they say is, I know you must be a Republican. I walk beside them and tell them I understand where you're coming from because I am a Democrat. And I let them know that I'm not lying to them because I don't have to lie. And it seems to work. Now, as I said, those friends of yours were very hostile. They're in deep darkness because their God is not the God that they think they're worshiping when they go to church, but their God is CNN, MSNBC, and the Democratic Party. And, you know, I challenge people even on Facebook, how can you hate without a cause unless you've been trained to hate and you don't even know why?
I hear you. I hear you. Barbara?
Yes.
Please tell people about your radio show that you host with your daughter, Bibi, and also please let them know how they can reach you.
Oh, yes. Okay. Well, we do Our Urban Story on Saturday at 3 o'clock. This is a program that we're on the network with law enforcement, retired and active. They started, some police officers in Paterson, New Jersey, started something called the Blue Magazine and the Blue Broadcast Network. It used to be DDV Radio, but they're changing it. And we talk about the current events, what's going on, and how what we can do as we, the people of the United States of America. We try to open people's eyes and their minds to the truth of many matters and many things that are going on. So we enjoy doing that. We've been doing that for a number of years. Now, how to contact me? Well, we have a website, and it's called BarbaraFromHarlem.com. I also have email, BarbaraFromHarlemUSA@Yahoo.com. And what else are we doing? Miss Diamond, you know, she is my daughter, and she's a big help. Now, what else am I supposed to tell them, Miss Diamond?
Well, that's it for now.
That's it for now.
That's it from now. And you know, I heard Bibi in the background, and I'm glad she said for now, because I definitely want to bring you back. I want to bring you back soon. I want to get into some other things with you. And one of them is I'm going to talk to you about, like, you and Michael Cutler, you know, who was an immigration guy, you know, that still carry that Democratic Party tag. We'll get into that. But I really appreciate you coming on. God bless you, your daughter, and your family. You're doing great things. You have the protection of God because, you know, you make a lot of people angry, but you're bringing truth. So I thank you for coming on the broadcast, and I definitely want to bring you on again soon.
Well, thank you so much, Gary, and thank you for mentioning my book, Escaping the Racism of Low Expectations, which they can get at Amazon, or they can even notify us, and we can send them a signed copy.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
Yes.
Barbara from Harlem, everybody.
Thank you so much.
You are welcome. And people, Harlem has a soft spot in my heart that I'll get into later, because we have to get on with our next guest, because I am so honored and elated that he was able to carve out a few minutes, because I've been trying to get Brandon Tatum for some while, and I know he's a very busy man. You know, Brandon Tatum was a high school All-American football player out of Fort Worth, Texas. Played safety at the University of Arizona. It's funny he played safety because one of his relatives was Jack Tatum. And you remember Jack Tatum, who played at Ohio State? When I was at Ohio U, Jack Tatum was knocking people out at Ohio State. He's a star for the Oakland Raiders. He's from my neck of the wood. I think he was from Passaic, New Jersey. But if Brandon hit anything like Jack did, I'm glad he didn't play football because he would have hurt somebody. Brandon served 6 years with the Tucson Police Department. Okay? Then he took his game to another level as the founder of TatumReport.com. He's the CEO of three companies. And along with Candace Owens, he co-founded Blexit, which is the Black Exit Movement. You've seen him all over Fox News shows, including the Ingram Angle. He's on Fox and Friends. He's on OAN, Newsmax, Headline News. He's spoken at more than 26 colleges in 20 states this year alone. He's recognized for his godly perspective, dynamic personality, authentic message, and his natural ability to relate to the everyday American. And if you've ever listened to him, you'll understand why. Because when you hear him, as you're about to, he just sounds so logical. He's been invited to the White House many, many times to visit President Trump. This former police officer is the author of the book, Beaten Black and Blue, Being a Black Cop in America Under Siege. I'm glad to bring to the show Mr. Brandon Tatum.
Hey, welcome. How you doing?
I'm doing fine, and thank you for coming on, Brandon. I really, really appreciate it. Please tell us about your book, because the biggest thing that's going on, or one of the biggest things that's going on right now in this country, is the assault on law enforcement.
Yeah, it's tremendously sad that we see this going on. You know, this is a group of heroes. Police officers are heroes. They go out every day in a selfless way, and they put their lives on the line for people they don't know and people that probably hate them. Putting their families aside just to save people who are probably never thankful for it. And it's sad to see what they're doing to our country. And one of the reasons why I wrote the book was because I wanted to give people an idea of what it's like, you know, growing up as a normal person in America who happened to be black, and how I ended up being a police officer and the things that I saw, and how it has changed me forever in the way I look at the present things that are happening.
Okay, please, can you relate some of those to the people from your upbringing in Fort Worth? What you saw that as a football player that thought about playing in the NFL, what you saw that would even take you in the direction of wanting to be a policeman? Because you're right in that age group where a lot of kids were turning away from, you know, looking at the police as the enemy instead of the part of the problem.
Yeah, I mean, growing up, I never in my wildest dreams imagined being a police officer. You know, I got arrested at 8 years old for smoking marijuana in a vacant house. I got jumped in a 5-deuce Hoover Crip gang when I was a young kid, you know. So, you know, I was living the bad boy life to a certain degree. You know, my parents, you know, they wouldn't, you know, get on me to make sure I was lined up. That's how I ended up playing football and being successful at it. But I never thought about that. You know, I grew up in an Afrocentric perspective, meaning that I grew up around nothing but black people. My whole life revolved around the black experience. And I was taught to be a Democrat, and I was taught to hate the police, and they're all racist white people. But when I got to college, you know, things changed. I started to see that the things that were told to me that were, you know, brainwashed, I was brainwashed into believing weren't necessarily true. You know, white people didn't dislike me, and I wasn't going to run into racist white people at college, you know, on the college campus while I'm trying to succeed. And that began to break the mold in me. And then I got saved in 2008. I was baptized
Amen.
In his name,
Amen.
Filled with his spirit. And that just revolutionized who I was. You know, I that race stuff went right out the window. I never once again looked at a person and thought about their race. I look at us as all God's children, and we're all one big family, you know, and there's good and bad and everything that you do, you know, everything that you observe, whether it's race, whether it's sex, whether it's, you know, you live in Texas or live on the East Coast, you know, there's good and bad everywhere. You just have to be, you know, a person that lives a good life and try to have grace and mercy on other people. And with that perspective, you know, I tried out for the NFL in 2010 NFL draft. Funny thing enough, the Oakland Raiders promised my agent that they were going to draft me. Although I didn't play much in college, I was in a doghouse. I got hurt. You know, my career sucked, even though I was one of the most talented football players probably to ever play the game. But the Oakland Raiders promised they would draft me, and they passed on me on my birthday, on draft day, on my birthday. They passed on me, and my life went in a different direction. And for the first time, you know, I allowed, you know, the police department to give me an opportunity. You know, I was a little afraid. I didn't know what to expect. And the biggest pivotal point for me was a ride-along. I did a ride-along with Officer Sean Payne. He's a hero. He's in my book. And he changed my life. And I knew that God had called me police officer, and that's what I did for 6.5 years.
Brandon, I have to say something that I've never said before on the air. I've never said this to a person on the air, and I've never said this to a person when I saw them face to face. But I do want to say this to you. What you just said, there's an aspect of this that's going to go over people's head until I explain it. It was so heartwarming of what you said, and you truly sound like a man filled with the Spirit. I used to be a sports writer. I was a sports writer at the New York Daily News. I was a sports writer at Newsday, you know, big metropolitan newspapers. I covered a lot of professional sports, including football, baseball, and basketball. I know a lot of athletes. I know a lot of people that played in colleges. And basically, usually, a lot of the athletes that are in other professions now that didn't go into the NFL or didn't make it in the NFL, when they talk about their college past, they inflate their numbers or they inflate their significance on the team. Now, I looked up your numbers, so I know how many games you played. I know how many tackles you had. And that you came out and said you got a full scholarship to Arizona, and you went there as a 4- or 5-star recruit, but that you had the humility to say that, you know, you didn't play that much in college. You had some, you ended up, whatever happened, the injuries, whatever happened, but you said it. And usually, everybody usually, yeah, I was a 1,000-yard rusher, and I was this, that, and the other thing. Just, you know, and it's just so humbling to hear that from you, that you actually just really told the truth, and that's what a man of God does. So I thank you, but I just wanted to throw that out because, you know, a lot of guys, when that career, when you were a star high school athlete and everybody in the hometown, I know Texas is football crazy in Fort Worth, you know, they probably had visions of grandeur for you, and to come back and to go in another direction, having not actually taken that opportunity or had that opportunity, and to be able to tell it the way you tell it, I think is truly humbling and truly shows about the character that you have. Speaking of character, you and Candace Owens started Blexit, the Black Exit Movement. Okay. What was it like at the beginning trying to deal with red-pilling black people that basically at that time had no real outlet to hear this message before they heard it from Blexit?
Yeah, and thank you for those kind words. You know, I figured that, you know, I thought everybody had enough integrity to know that people can look up their stats. So there's no need for me to lie. You know, God gave me a tremendous testimony, but Candace and I, you know, it was something that needed to happen, and it was very difficult. It's still difficult, man. You know, it's hard to convince people who have been brainwashed, you know, even if they want to believe you, they just can't because they're entrapped in an environment, in relationships, in parental relationships where they can't come out and be conservative. They can't come out and say they like Trump or whether they can't come out and say that they tired of the Democrats' BS that they've been spewing all these years because they'll lose it all. People wouldn't believe how many celebrities call Candace and I personally, reach out to us in secret and tell the story of how they're really conservative, but they can't say anything. And thank God that we're out there speaking and they're supporting us from the, you know, in the background. So it's incredibly hard, even though we're doing the right thing and we're waking up a lot of people. It's hard to get more people involved. However, we've done an incredible job. You know, we started with nothing. It was just me and Candace. And a lot of people came on and supported us financially and volunteered. And now we have over 40, you know, we have over 40 chapters around the country. I mean, and last year we only had 20. So we doubled our chapters. We want to be in all 50 states by the end of this year. We're starting the after-school program for young kids who don't have the opportunity. And so we're doing a tremendous work, and all glory be to God, because, you know, we're just two young black people. You know, I would say Americans of African descent. I like to use that because I'm an American first. And we're just out here trying to do what's right. We see the brainwashing that's going. We were brainwashed. And it's almost like being saved. You know, when you're in darkness and you come to light, you want everybody to come to the light. You're like, hey, man, look, you know, Christ is the answer. And it's the same thing when politically it's like, you know, conservatism is the answer. Like, come on to the good side. You can have peace. You can have freedom. Everything is here. And you just really hope that people will take on, and a lot of people have, but we still got a long way to go.
Yes, this is true. Now, here's another area where we have a long way to go, and this is very dangerous. How do you deal with the black community's hatred of the police? How do you deal with that? These are the ones, see, without the police, grandmothers are going to get knocked in the head and lose their purses. People, you know, the gangs, everything that's going on, all the work that police do, forgetting the rest of the country, just for the moment, let's just zero in on the black communities and how the police protect people, and these people just have this venom now and hatred for them. How did this come about, and how should we now as America deal with it?
Well, I think it's, like I said, it's a bunch of brainwashing that's going on. You know, black people have a past in this country, and it's a very emotional past. You know, when you think about ancestors being slaves, and you know, you think about people getting lynched, and black people couldn't drink out of the same water fountain. You know, my grandmother was alive when she couldn't drink out of the same water fountain as white people. And that generational hurt gets passed down unnecessarily to younger people, and then they take it out on the system. And now every police officer is bad, although they never had a bad experience. You know, every white man is a racist, although all white people, you know, most white people are helping brothers, you know, become successful in great ways. So it's a lot of brainwashing that has gone on. And the funny thing is that when you sit down face to face with any black person, I've never been in a situation where I sit down face to face and we have a conversation about policing, knowing I'm a police officer and I know the things that are going on that most people don't. I never had a person disagree with me. And most people say, you know what? You're right, man. Yeah. You know, you're right. And that's because if the truth is revealed from a person of color, people of color will adhere to it and figure out that, you know, maybe they need to think differently. So, but it's sad that majority of the black community isn't getting this message, man. Even black police officers, like I said, you know, one of the unique things about my book is writing from the perspective of being black and a police officer. And that's even, you know, I ain't gonna say it's worse than being white, because if you white, you screwed. You know, you shoot a black man who, you know, shot 45 people and shot three officers. I mean, you're still gonna be considered a murderer, and LeBron James is gonna tweet about you. But, you know, being black, you know, they perceive you as a traitor. You know, you don't love your people. You hate your people, and still protecting and serving with your life, even in the inner cities. I mean, it's very painful to watch and experience.
I kind of know what you mean, because my first cousin, he's a policeman in Atlanta, and he, you know, obviously he's black, and I've heard the story for quite a few years. Please tell the people about TatumReports.com, and it's interesting, from a police officer to Blexit and now TatumReports.com, and you have several other enterprises. Please let them know what you're doing, and let me know why you have just taken on so many things. It's like you just keep branching out and branching out and branching out.
God has put this entrepreneurial spirit in me. I guess got to keep growing. You know, I live in the greatest country on planet Earth, and it's only one lifetime that I have to make a mark on this country. Matter of fact, make a mark on this world. So we started the Tatum Report because I got tired of fake news. I got tired of people lying and being deceptive and not really portraying the media in from the proper balance. So all of our writers write very good articles to articulate of what's going on in this country. So if a person were to read it, they can be balanced. They can know, okay, there's another side to this. There's another side to these shootings. There's another side to LeBron James' tweet. You know, there's another side to these things. So that's why I started that. You know, I also got an energy drink that's coming out. It's going to be coming out in a few months, and it's going to be the best energy drink on planet Earth. You know, everybody that has sampled it, they think it's amazing. It's all organic, all natural, reusable bottles. You know, we're doing it big. And so I got that going. You know, I have a merch store. We do really well on the merch. Again, we talked about the book. And I just have, you know, I want to maximize who I am. I want to be the best version of myself and leave nothing back. And missing out on football, sometimes I feel like I missed out on football. You know, the draft just came about, and I felt some type of way about it. However, I think God has given me an opportunity to do even greater things, and I need to walk in that.
That's a wonderful statement, there. My final question for you. Having been to the White House, and I assume you've met President Trump, what do you want to tell America, all Americans and all liberals in particular? I don't care what color they are, because it doesn't really matter. Just as you said, God just sees you in two ways. And it's not black and white. It's either, you know the Savior or you don't. So, but the point I want to, having been in, and I interviewed Donald Trump back when he was the owner of the New Jersey Generals twice, and know a lot of people that know him. But please tell people about the real Donald Trump, because, you know, maybe they'll believe it from you, because you hear all these lies and all these things, and you see things where Jesse Jackson gave him a Man of the Year award, and he's with Al Sharpton and Muhammad Ali, and with all these people, and now everybody's turned on him, you know. So, you know, please tell them about the real Trump.
Yeah, I mean, I want to tell everybody that somehow I've been listening to the mainstream. You're getting lied to, man. The guy's not bad. You know, I've met him. I mean, he's a very kind individual. He's funny. He's charismatic. He's exactly the same way you would expect him to be. Now, I never worked for him, so I don't know if he's an a-hole as a boss. However, he's not a racist. That man loves on us. When we came, we brought 2,000 minorities to the White House. He addressed me and Candace Owens, called us his friends. I've been to the White House on two other occasions with 400-plus black leaders from all around the country. I mean, they loved on us. They treat us with hospitality. They roll out the red carpet. I mean, President Trump was taking pictures with people, signing their books, taking pictures with their books. You know, he's a big-time person on making money, and you promoting somebody's book, you know, you're making them a lot of money, and that wasn't his concern. He really loved people, and they just paint him as a person that he's really not. And it's unfortunate, because a lot of people are suffering from the hatred they have against him, and they feel like that the country was going downhill. And it was all a lie. The guy is nowhere near a racist. You know, he had every HBCU president, historically black college and university president, in his White House, in the Oval Office. He had over 100 black pastors from around the country in the Oval Office. You know, he's had us to the White House at least 6 or 7 times. So I wish that people would just stop listening to the media like I did at first, and then find out for yourself, man. Go listen to his speech. Listen to it. Objectively, listen to it. Listen to what the things he said, and make your own judgment. Don't let nobody tell you who other people are. And I'd say do that for everybody. Don't listen to what people say about Brandon Tatum, about Ben Carson or whatever. You can go down the list. Joe Biden, Kamala. Don't just listen to what people say, conservative or liberal. Go watch what they do. You pay attention. You write down your notes about what you perceive this person to be. And at the end of the day, if people do that, they'll have an equal, balanced perspective of Donald Trump and others, whom I think get a bad rap in the media.
There you have it. Now, you heard it from somebody that's been there. And he put it out. He hasn't worked for him. He hasn't worked for him, but what he's seen, the guy worth knowing and a guy worth trusting, you know, because he's done nothing, really, that should disarm you. He's done everything pro-America, pro-God, pro-family, pro-country, pro-constitution, lowest black unemployment, right? Blacks getting jobs, released people like Alice Johnson and people from prison that had been in for too long, and gave Jack Johnson his dignity back. And by the way, I would always say, what kind of racist would be doing anything that would help black people? What kind of racist would be bringing all black people to the White House? Like, I looked at the when you had the blacks for Trump, you were in there. Do you think David Duke would do that? What kind of racist would want that? That's going to kill the quote-unquote white supremacist base. They're so off on this guy.
Ask this. He didn't need the black vote. He doesn't need to, he never needed the black vote. He could have done it with only white people and Hispanic people and others who vote a little more balanced than black folks. He won with, like, I don't know, 8% or less of the black vote. Republicans have won with, like, 5%, 3% of the black vote. He didn't need black people. He could have still won. You know, and so when you see him bending over backwards to do things for the black community, it's because he actually cares. All the black people that he's helped, you know, even when he wasn't the president. And here's another thing. He brought black people to the table. He gave the invitation and said, hey, if you want to come down to the White House, come on down here. Kim Kardashian went and got people's dignity back. Kanye West went. They called him crazy. Why didn't LeBron James go? Why didn't none of these people that were claiming all this stuff go down to the White House and hold his feet to the fire and say, look, I showed up. I told you what to do, like Martin Luther King did. No matter what who the president was, Martin Luther King went down there and said, look, here's what I'm telling you. He can go out and report that the man is a fraud. But they never did it. They never took him up on it because they knew for a fact that if they went down there, he'd listen to them like he did Kim Kardashian, and things would have changed, and they would have been forced to change their perspective.
There you go. Hey, look, my cousin, the one I told you was a policeman in Atlanta, when a long time ago, when LeBron James was in the eighth grade, he called me and said, yo, bro, I just saw this ninth grader playing in the Rucker League at Harlem, just deucing and just abusing NBA players. And that's the first time I heard of LeBron James, and I followed his career. But the problem is, he may be one of the greatest basketball players in the world ever. But come to see Trump, he wouldn't even go see Laura Ingraham. Laura called him out. He wouldn't go see her. So, you know, that's all I have to say about that. Brandon, thank you very much for coming on. Please tell people how they can reach you. And then I have a little surprise for you.
Yeah, theofficertatum.com. People can get me at theofficertatum.com. That's where you can get my book. That's where you can do it. It's a contact link, a booking link if you want to book me. Theofficertatum.com is where you find everything Tatum.
Brandon, I hope you didn't hit as hard as Jack Tatum, because I was at Ohio U when Jack was playing at Ohio State, and he was knocking people, I mean literally knocking people cold. I hope you weren't that vicious with your hits.
Nah, I was a hitter. I was a hitter, but, you know, I have to be honest, man. I wasn't killing people like Jack Tatum. I wasn't paralyzing people and putting them in hospitals, and I'm sure many people retired after, you know, going against Jack Tatum, so. You know, maybe if I'd had a chance to play in the league for the Raiders, I would have got some of that energy from Jack Tatum, and I would have been laying him out, but that never happened.
Yeah, there you go. I have a little surprise for you. There's somebody that would like to give you a shout-out on the air, and it's not dangerous. It's going to be safe. You will not be embarrassed, but there's somebody that, oh, Brandon Tatum's going to be on? Let me give bro a shout out. So is somebody there that wants to say hi to Brandon? Do we have somebody
there? Brandon,
in
what's up? It's Pierre. What's up, Brandon?
Oh, what's up, man? You know, I ain't going to lie. I thought it was going to be my daddy or something. I'm like, remember my daddy? Come over here and say what's up. But Pierre, man. I love you the same, man. I love you the same, man. You're an amazing young man. So I'm assuming the audience know exactly who you are and what you do, right?
Well, if they don't, they will after I give them the introduction after you've gone. But Pierre's been on the show twice before. But this is Pierre Wilson.
Okay.
And you two guys were together doing Blexit a couple of weeks ago, right?
Yeah.
I wanted to do this too, Brandon, because I know we've talked about it, and I've shared this with you privately. We actually had a leadership conference last year, and I said a little bit about this at the conference. But I was like, look, I want to say this publicly too. Brandon, I know how humble you are, and you and Candace are both humble, and you guys don't care about the praise or accolades and that kind of stuff. But, you know, myself and so many members of Blexit and leaders in Blexit think about this all the time. Like, if you guys didn't do what you did, if you guys weren't outspoken and unafraid and unapologetic, like, a lot of us would not be in this moment right now. So I just, you know, sometimes when you're in it, you may not even realize the impact that you guys have had. But, you know, what you guys did for me, just personally, you know what I'm saying, and just so many different people that I talk to, your name comes up, Candace's name comes up, and the lives you guys have changed, I just think it's just incredible. And I think it should be celebrated, and I'm a big fan. My grandfather always said this, like, celebrate people while they're here. And I just, you know, on behalf of all of Legbit and everybody, man, we just appreciate everything that you and Candace have just done and the motivation to push forward and continue to spread that message. So I wanted to do that publicly.
I love you, brother, man. I appreciate you. You know, I'm just doing what God told me to do. And I want to pass the torch to young men like you who are out here doing a great thing. Family man, you know, you taking the mantle, you know, and you didn't have to. You started out as a volunteer, and now you're taking over the world. So, hey, man, I'm just trying to do my part that God told me to do, and I appreciate you just as much.
Appreciate it. Love you, B.
Brandon, thank you very much for coming on. You're always welcome to come back on the show. I'll try and get you back because you have a lot to say. And thank you very much for coming on. Mr. Brandon Tatum, everyone.
All right. God bless you guys.
God bless. And you hear the voice, but now let's talk about who he is. He's been a member of the Mecklenburg County Republican Club. That's in North Carolina. And the Mecklenburg County Young Republicans, Black Voices for Trump. His story is rather fantastic. You've heard it several times on this show. You're going to hear it again, how he saw Candace Owens sticking up for conservatives and couldn't believe it and went bonkers when he heard, how can this woman be conservative? And he got red pill so fast. And now look at where he is. He's the national brand director for the organization started by Candace and Brandon, and you just heard they were down in Chattanooga. They just had a big event, which I wanted to get Pierre back on because, see, a lot of groups that rose up when President Trump was president dissipated and just fell apart after he's gone. But Blexit is still going strong, and Pierre is going to tell us about that. I'm glad to have back to the show for the third time Mr. Pierre Wilson.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me again.
Hey, Pierre, thanks for coming back. Before we get into other things, tell everybody what happened in Chattanooga and who was there. I know Candace was there. You were there. Will Witt, Brandon, and how did it go? And what's the tenor like of the people? How are people handling, you know, the rejection of a stolen election, but having to deal with having these Marxist Democrats in the White House?
Yeah, we had a Blexit rally in Chattanooga. It was one of the first ones it's actually the first one we've had this year. We hadn't had a chance to really get together due to all the restrictions and everything. You know how crazy these governors have gotten around the country. So it's been tough for us to really find a good location. But we finally found one. We got everybody together. It was a sold out event. It was so much energy in the room, Gary. I mean, I tell you, you could tell that we hadn't really lost the momentum. A lot of people would ask that, like, is the momentum going to still be there? You know, I know people are upset about what happened with the election and different things, but people are fired up. I think people are focused still on the Blexit mission. We always said that we are not here for a politician or a president's term or anything connected to politics, right? We have a mission that is based on our five pillars, which you guys can check out at Blexit.com. We go into the communities, regardless of who is in office. We want to change hearts and minds. We want to help. We want to free people. And that doesn't stop no matter who's in office. So the passion and the fire is still there. But, yeah, we have some great speakers, Candace, Brandon, Will Witt. We had Robbie Starbuck for the first time down there. He was fantastic. Vernon Jones came down there. You know, congratulations, by the way, to Vernon, who's running for governor of Georgia. It was electric. It was electric in that room. I did my Blexit Breakdown halftime show, and I interviewed some incredible new faces, some new people. And that's the thing that I loved about this rally. It was so many new faces, right? Like, it's easy to do these things and then try to bring out the same people. No, that's what I love about Blexit. We always end up having some new, fresh faces, some fresh blood at our events, and it just reminds us that what we're doing is working. The passion and the spark is still there. So it was a good time. It was a good time.
That is good to hear that. Now, what was the message? What was the message that, because there's always a thread that goes through. And then I want you to give the five pillars, because this is one of the reasons I bring you guys on the show, to tell people what you do. And so you can enlighten and educate the people as to you know, a lot of things that they don't know.
Yeah, so the main message, again, one of the things that Blexit talks a lot about, and you'll hear this a lot with Brandon and Candace, and then some of the things that I've been sharing on social media, is we always talk about restoring the family unit, right? To us, that's probably the key issue in Black America right now, right? That's that the government is not daddy, okay? The government's not the parent. The government cannot run your family or handle your family, or God doesn't ordain the government to be the head of your family. That's not how it works. So we do advocate for the Black family to be restored, and all families ultimately in America to be restored. And you heard a lot about that at the Chattanooga rally. We talk about the need for self-accountability. That's something that's not being discussed enough right now, right? Like another thing that I learned from my grandfather is if something happens, right, something bad in your life happens, the first thing you want to do is look at yourself. What could you have done differently in that situation? How could I fix the way I may have handled something, right? You don't start by blaming everybody else. And you see a lot of that right now, unfortunately, in Black America, where we're blaming cops and we're blaming everybody else, not realizing that the cops are there because of a lot of the issues that we have in our community, right? They're there because we are right now committing on average more crimes compared to the population of white people and Black people. Our percentage of the population, we're over committing crimes, right, compared to other races. We yeah. have to check ourselves first. We have to fix ourselves. So you hear a lot about self-accountability. You hear a lot about school choice, and that actually kind of leads me into the pillars, because that's what you hear at the Blexit rally. So obviously one of the main pillars is school choice. We advocate for alternative education. We also talk a lot about criminal justice reform in the way that we also help ourselves. It's not about defunding the cops or blaming everything on cops. No, we want to make sure that the system works, but it also starts with us. We talk about champion entrepreneurship. We want to develop history programs. One of the things that Candace talks a lot about is if you don't know where you've been, you won't know where you're going. You're going to be doomed to repeat history, right? So we want to make sure that people understand their history the right way, not this critical race theory crap that they're trying to roll out. And then we also obviously have these amazing live compelling experiences like the Blexit rally and like the massive, I heard Brandon talk about this, the massive trip to the White House that we took last year, over 2,000 minorities. We took over D.C., didn't burn a building down, didn't break a window, didn't cause any destruction, and we protested the right way back in the blue. So those are our main pillars, and that's kind of what people heard in Chattanooga as well.
Now, I know there's some people that maybe never heard Pierre before, and they're going, boy, this is a brother that he's got it all down. This is a brother that's probably been conservative since he came out of the womb. Well, Pierre, tell them the story. Oh, boy. This is wonderful. I love hearing this every time I hear it, because this is the story that a lot of Black people have. There's a moment in time. Barbara from Harlem said her moment was when people started saying OJ, you know, because he was Black, it didn't matter, he killed his wife. It didn't matter. I'm glad he got off. And she's like, what? And everybody's had a moment. Brandon had his moment. I had my moment. Pierre, wrap it down.
Yeah, well, you know, I grew up in what people would consider, unfortunately, again, a typical Black family. My parents were divorced. My mom was a single mother, and you know, from the moment I was born, Democrat was the way. You didn't talk about Republicans. You didn't discuss the Republicans. Matter of fact, whenever there was a presidential primary or something like that, it was never about, oh, let's look at the Republican side and the Democrat. It was just always about which Democrat are we going to support. And then whoever came out of that pile, no matter what that person's record was, they were the automatic choice for my family. So that was what I was, you know, that was what was ingrained in me from the beginning. You never give the Republicans a try. They're racist. They're horrible people. They don't care about Black people. They want to put us back into chains, right? You know, I had a moment in college that I think began this spark, and it was when President Obama, then Senator Obama, was running against Hillary Clinton. And I wasn't quite sure. Remember, at this point, I'm still liberal, and I wasn't quite sure where I was leaning. I think I was leaning towards Hillary at the time. Forgive me, audience, but I think I was, because I didn't know much about Senator Obama. I didn't know. I was like, this guy doesn't have a record. I don't even know what I'm basing off my vote off of. So I was sitting in this room, HBCU, University of Maryland, Eastern Shore. Everyone's saying Barack Obama, and I said, I don't know. I think, you know, I'm thinking about Hillary. Well, the entire room completely turned around and looked at me as if I had said I was getting ready to shoot someone. And I couldn't believe the anger, the animosity, the everything that was coming from people. They were like, how could you be a traitor to black people? You should be voting for him. He's black. And that's what everybody kept saying. And I'm like, well, what's his record? They was like, it doesn't matter. He's black. I look back, and that was one of the first moments, but it wasn't enough yet. Fast forward a couple years later, I'm up at night. I don't know why I'm up at 3 a.m. I'm, you know.
For the same reason I'm up. That's what we do.
What we do at 3 a.m. How tall is Jesus? You know, random stuff when we should be asleep. But I came across this video on YouTube, and it's just the still, right? I hadn't hit play yet. It was Candace, who was then Candace Owens, with a megaphone, and people behind her in MAGA hats, and they're standing in front of the White House. And I'm like, what kind of foolishness is this? You know, like, what? It's black people in MAGA hats? I am like, this has got to be some, you know, excuse my language, some coonness or something. Like, I was that person calling black people. I didn't know coons and whatnot. And I hit play, and she is ringing off these stats, you know, single motherhood rate, you know, government dependent. I mean, she's talking about the violence in the black. She's just going through the Candace Owens spill, and I'm, you know, I'm feeling all kinds of emotions. I'm like, she's lying. It's no way. She's telling the truth. This is not real. But at the same time, I can't take my eyes off of it. I'm still watching. And I go back and I replay it. I write down everything she's saying. I go do my own research, and she is right. She is right. The single motherhood rate in the black community is over 70-something percent, right? We are killing each other over 90% of the time. I mean, I'm looking at the government dependency and how many of our people are on welfare, and then the generations that continue to be on welfare. Like, I am like, I feel lied to. I feel bamboozled. I feel like what I've been taught my entire life has been a lie, because I'm looking to see who's running all of our black cities, and it's Democrats. Democrats are the mayors. Democrats are the ones on the school board, our city councils. It's Democrats in all these black cities. How are we blaming a party that doesn't even have any control in our community? How can that happen? So, you know, I go through a range of emotions. One of them is the last one I remember distinctively. It was a feeling of fear. And I'm not one that's easily scared, but I knew that if I were to talk about my conservative beliefs to my mama or my daddy or my family, my friends, it would cause a ruckus, and that it did. But fast forward to now, I have let all the friends that I've lost, the family that have turned against me or disowned me or whatever you want to say because of my support. I've had family members ask me if I'm on drugs because of my support when I first said I was supporting President Trump. I've had people say the worst of the worst things that I've helped throughout my life. But it has not deterred me, because the mission that God has me on and so many of us on is unshakable. It's unmovable. And I know for a fact that what we are doing is changing lives. So part of what I like with Blexit is that we are creating a space for people to feel and be who they want to be without fear of backlash. So that's what keeps me driving every day.
Yeah, that's such a powerful testimony, Pierre. And I say this with sadness that I'm about to say, because, you know, please address the fact that you have, and the part that really stuck out to me every time you give your testimony here, I lost all my close friends. I've lost close friends that I went to college with back in the 70s, that people almost died with in car accidents, and people that would have given their life for me, I would have given my life for them. And the thing is, when Barack Obama won, I was ticked off, but I didn't dump them. I didn't stop visiting them. I didn't stop talking to them. I tried to still reason and change their mind. How is the feeling when you lose people where they just walk away? Like you said, people that you put your life on the line for.
In the beginning, I think it was tough. I'm not going to sugarcoat it and say, oh, you know, it doesn't matter. I don't care. In the beginning, it was tough, especially because I'm an extrovert, right? And I also, I love people. I love helping people. I love being around people. Some of these people, again, like I said, some of these people are people I helped. I personally helped in different ways. And to watch people turn their back on me, who have known me, who knew my character, who up until that moment supported me, it wasn't easy. But I will tell you now, it doesn't impact me the way it used to, not in a negative way, at least. It doesn't, because I realize that if these people will turn quickly, then they were probably never really there for you in the first place, right? They never really supported you or had your back. Because at the very least, I love when people say, I may not agree with you, but I respect the right for you to have your opinion. And I have people in my life who do that, right? They still aren't where I'm at yet. Some of them are, but some aren't there yet. They won't abandon me. They don't treat me any different. They just say, I respect the right for you to have your opinion. That means that you respect me. If you think that I'm supposed to just fall in line with exactly the way that you think, it means that you have no respect for me as a person. And that I can't tolerate. And then when people feel like, oh, you must be brainwashed, or someone saying like, you must have been getting paid for this. Before I got a job with Blexit, I was, like Brandon said, I was doing this for a year, for free. I never even asked for a job. You know, I'm thankful for it, obviously, and I appreciate it. And I'm living my dream, but this was never about a job. I was doing this. I was door knocking. I was showing up at meetings, all of that before the chapters or anything were even formed. So, this is because my heart, my soul, my passion is into this, and I believe what I believe, and I have done the research, and I love when people respect that. So for people who are listening, don't be deterred by your God-given mission. Stay the course, because at the end of the day, the people that you want, the people that should be in your life will be there. And I've made a lot of new friends and what I consider family since.
Brandon, I'm going to say something. I don't know if it's going to stun you or not, and I don't know if it's going to stun the listening audience. I've never said this on the air. When I became a born-again Christian, when I got saved in 1997 and gave my life to Jesus Christ, my life turned radically. I had a lot of friends that said exactly what you said. Well, I don't see Christianity the way you do. I think you're a little extreme. I think you're a little too much into Jesus, but I respect you. I've seen how your life has turned around. You know, I get it. I can live with that. I can live with you being, you know, all in on God, all in on Jesus. I get that. And they never walked away over my Christianity, even though it made them uncomfortable. Like I'd stop going to parties and stuff, but I'd go to barbecues and stuff, and they'd be like, oh, here comes the preacher, man. And you could just see they stop telling their dirty jokes. I said, why are you stopping? Because of me. Okay. However, when I supported Donald Trump, that was the final. They could deal with Jesus. They couldn't deal with Trump. Can you explain that to me?
I think it's the media lie. It's the leftist lie. You know, I'm so glad you brought this up, because just the other day I was sitting there with my wife, and we were we were looking at. I don't know if people saw the roast of Trump, but we were watching the roast of Trump, and it was hilarious. And I'm so, that just shows his personality, his sense of humor, that he let people do that. But anyway, you know, you had Snoop Dogg on there, and then it got us thinking. I'm like, wait, Snoop Dogg is on there, and he was at the time encouraging Trump to run for president. So we just started going online, and we're just looking at pictures and stuff, and I'm like, yeah, I remember I was a person who listened to hip-hop too a lot, and I remember Trump being mentioned in rap songs and different things. So we're looking at pictures, and I mean, he's with Don King, he's with P. Diddy, Russell Simmons, you know, Oprah, all these famous black people, and they love him. You know, him and Milan, I mean, they're hugging him, they're thanking him, I mean, I believe they gave him an award for his service to the black community.
Jesse Jackson gave it to him, Man of the Year.
Yeah, and I'm just like, isn't it crazy how the moment he came down those escalators and he was running as a Republican, that they turned on him, and the media, who obviously we all know is the in the pocket of the Democrats, right? They have pushed this narrative down people's throats to the point that the black community forgot that they were claiming Trump as one of their own, you know? And the problem is, though, and this is the thing that I think people need to have hope in, even despite what happened to Trump, the black vote increased for Trump. And you have to understand that they were calling this man the most racist man in America. I have not seen a president be attacked in this way as a racist, and I don't know how long. I mean, it was brutal the last 4 years. And the fact that he increased his percentage despite all of that proves that there is an awakening that is taking place, and we have to continue to build on it. But the media is just relentless, and they have a narrative, and they're going to push their candidates. They always are. They always will.
Well, the good thing is because of organizations like Blexit, you, Candace, and Brandon and everybody else that was involved, that's part of the reason that voting went up. My final question for you, I know you don't get around as much as you used to because of this virus situation, and none of us do, but from what you're hearing, having had a few months to catch the stench of what a socialist America would look like run by Marxists, are the people you're talking to finally starting to get it? And the reason I asked is because one of the things that I thought, I didn't want it to go this way, but if you notice, when God's people, you know, the Hebrews, a couple times they didn't quite get it. They had to get spanked. They had to go into slavery to realize what freedom is about. And I don't think we're going to go that far. I don't think you'll let us go that far. But now that they're getting a stench of what a socialist America looks like, America where people don't want the police, where they want free drugs, where they want abortion, where they want to open up the border. And isn't it interesting? We can't go anywhere we want to go, and we have to social distance, but they can burn down Portland. They can burn down Seattle. Antifa and Black Lives Matter can have thousands in the street. They don't care if they have masks. People are coming across the border. They don't care if they have masks, but they care if we do. Are people starting to get the stench of this and starting to catch on?
I 100% believe that is happening. I do. I think one important thing, too, obviously the border and everything you just mentioned is important, but one other thing that I'm noticing is that people are starting to pay attention to the price tags of these things, right? $4.1 trillion, I believe, is around the number of his latest policy proposals. And people can look this up. That was about the amount that was spent to win World War II, okay? That just gives you an idea of the amount of money that Biden is trying to spend. And if anyone has kids out there, I said this in my story the other day, everyone should be afraid, but you should be very concerned, very afraid, because that's the kind of reckless spending that will collapse our economy, you know, at some point. So, I think people are starting to realize, like, wait a minute, this stuff isn't free, you know?
By the time.
Someone has to pay for these things, and I think those questions are starting to rise up in their head. And then you look at what Biden promised, right, when he was running. He said he was going to be a moderate and all this. He was going to do bipartisan work and everything. He is the most progressive and leftist president I think we may have ever had, definitely since LBJ for sure, and I think that's what he's going for. But that's not what he ran on. You know, that's not what he said he was going to do. So I think people are realizing that they got swindled. They got bamboozled, right? They got tricked by Biden. And in most days, people don't know who's running the country. I think that's a question that comes up a lot. Who is really running this country? Because we see Biden out there, and sometimes, I mean, he can't even remember where he put his mask, and it's in front of him. So we're supposed to believe that he is making all of these decisions, right? Or is this, or did, are they really having Kamala Harris, Vice President Harris, running the show when we all know that she was rejected? Did she even get 2% of the vote? Like, I don't even know who's running the show. Starting to see that we've been tricked, and I think Republicans are right. I think 2022 is a opening for us to take back the House. No, don't listen to Nancy Pelosi and her overconfidence or whatever. She said before this last election, she said, "Oh, I'm not concerned about the House. I'm already raising money for 2022." She said that like a day or two before the election. She almost lost her speakership. She didn't see that coming. They went into panic. They're supposed to be celebrating because Biden so-called won, right? They went into panic, and they were trying to figure out what happened, because I think we're, 6-7 seats away from taking it. Don't let them fool you. The country is not happy. But for us as conservatives, I do think it's important for us to stick to a lot of value talking points and to be united against the Democrats. It is not always just about Trump. I love President Trump, but we do have to recognize that for some people he is a divisive figure. Some people, it's just the rhetoric. I can handle the rhetoric. Some people can't. Whatever, that's their prerogative. But the conservative values are values that we can win on, and we need to make sure that we're talking about that a lot, because Black people especially are conservative, and we just have to remind them, or I should say make them aware of that, and that they're voting the wrong way.
Pierre, thank you very much. Thank you for coming on. You're always welcome to come on. Please tell people how they can reach you and the organization and anything you want to promote.
Yeah, so my wife has been telling me to get better with this. So for me personally, you can visit me at PierreNWilson.com, PierreNWilson.com, and you can check me out on there. I've done a couple of speeches. I actually have a speech at Old Dominion coming up, and I just did one with the University of Toledo. For Blexit, please join us at Blexit. So go to Blexit.com/chapters. You can click on any of the states. It doesn't matter if there's not a chapter in your state currently. You can click on any of the states, scroll to the bottom. You'll see a place where it says join. Please join us. Again, I cannot stress enough, even if there's not a chapter in your state, join, because you could be the key to starting that chapter, okay? So please join us. And if, for those who are listening who would like to donate to Blexit, blexit.com/donate.
Pierre, once again, thank you for coming on. God bless you, your wife, the kids, and the family. And hopefully we'll be talking again soon.
Thank you. Thank you, Gary. I appreciate it. God bless you.
God bless you. Mr. Pierre N. I have to ask him next time what the N stands for. Pierre N. Wilson. You know, for some of you old timers, you'll get this. Having Brandon Tatum and Pierre Wilson coming on back to back is like Sam and Dave. Oh, boy, what the power those two guys pack. And it's incredible, because we're hearing from people, including Barbara from Harlem. You know, everybody that's come on this show, with the exception of Jerry Newcomb, who was raised through ministry and into theology, started out a Democrat just like I did. And that story is no different for my next guest, who is a frequent guest on this show and a person I am glad to call my friend. And this is a person who was the photographer to the stars. I mean, they're riding in limos, and he had all kind of people shooting weddings. He had a whole big photography business. And then he got the gig to shoot for President Donald Trump the year he ran for president. 2016, Gene Ho was Donald Trump's personal photographer. So he got to shoot all the rallies, but he also got to shoot everything behind the scenes. And Gene was a liberal. And at that time, you know, he got to see Trump when nobody's looking. And then at the end, he changed, and he'll talk about it. And he's gone from being the personal photographer of Donald Trump. Right now, he is the personal photographer for Diamond and Silk. His book, Trumpography, you've got to get it, because it's loaded with some of his great pictures, but also the story of how he went from liberal to conservative, and how Donald Trump went from being just another guy coming down an escalator that had to beat 16 counting a couple women, to the presidency. And Gene has been one of the few guys I know that still travels around the country and is speaking for conservative values. He's come a long, long way. He's running for mayor of Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, and I'm glad to bring back onto the show my friend, Mr. Gene Ho.
Hey, it has been wonderful talking with you, and great to be back on your show, so thank you very much.
Gene, it's great to talk to you again. And the first thing I want to do is ask you the last question that I asked Pierre Wilson, because he was just with a Blexit rally with Candace Owens and Brandon Tatum 2 weeks ago in Chattanooga. I know you've been, every time I call you, you're in another part of the country. So I know you've gotten out. And the good news about that, you're meeting people and you're hearing from people. Are they starting to get buyer's remorse, seeing what the Biden White House is, seeing that Mr. Moderate is really Mr. Marxist?
You know what? I am seeing the same thing. And here's the thing. The one important thing is, how does the conservatives feel? I said it many times before, that what you have here is you have the opposite, where we should be so upset as conservatives. They have the House. They have the Senate. They're going to pack the Supreme Court. They have the presidency. They have all these things. And yet, right now, I can tell you that the energy level on the conservative side is stronger than it has ever been before.
That's great to hear. But what I want to hear, because we're fighting for our life, they've pushed us against the wall. What I want to hear is, are you hearing anything on the other side? Since they're in control, do you see liberals starting to have buyer's remorse, in your opinion?
I've heard other people say that exact thing. Now, here's the thing. You know what? When I'm out there, I'll be honest, I'm not talking with a lot of liberals, and I don't get the full feel of the other side of things, but I have seen and I have heard a lot of people say the exact same thing.
Okay, okay. Well, let's see what people had to say about this. We all thought that President Trump was going to win again. You were there on and spoke at the White House on at the in front of the White House on January 6th and everything that went down. And a lot of us were stunned the way things went down. And then he was out of the White House. You've been on the show since then. But can you talk now about what's it been like dealing with conservatives, Christians, and people on the right? How are they handling the fact that Donald Trump is out of White House in lieu of knowing the election was stolen?
Well, here's the most amazing thing about that. And really, it has really helped us a lot because after January 6th, there has been an uprising on the left. Basically, they were emboldened to such a degree. I mean, it was horrible. People were calling for my arrest, even though I was nowhere near there on the Capitol. I was already headed home with my cell phone pinging in Richmond, Virginia. But yet, during that time, people were so emboldened on the left. Here's the thing. It's almost as if there was a big flood at the time, and then the earth opened up and then swallowed up all that water. Because I'm telling you, and you are right about this, I have heard silence from the left. But in other words, when it comes to the right, I've seen us more emboldened since then. It did take a few weeks. It took maybe a month, maybe 2 months for all that flood water to dry up. But now that it's dried up, all the energy that I feel is on the right now. And I haven't really heard much from people on the left. And if they have buyer's remorse, well, that's buyer's remorse. But the thing is, I feel, and from what I've seen from the right, is we have been empowered.
Okay. Yes. And you're hearing, and from what you're hearing, I'm always going to check in with what you're hearing, because I know you're close to Laura Trump and you talk to her a lot, and you know, you don't have to release any trade secrets, but what are you hearing about what the Donald is doing and preparing to doing that you can tell us, if anything?
Well, no, it's all good. One of the main things that I've been doing lately is I've been doing a lot of events with General Flynn and with Mike Lindell and Lynn Wood. I just happened to hop on the circuit with a lot of their, the same shows. We both work the Health and Freedom Conference. So I just spent time with them in Tulsa, spent other times with them, but we'll be back with them in Tampa with General Flynn, Mike Lindell and company. What I hear from that side of it is basically I feel that they are energized with what they are seeing. Now, I'm quoting or paraphrasing what General Flynn said, but he said that Maricopa County is the start of everything because that's where it all domino effects. The thing is, last 2 years, I spent approximately a total of 3 months in Arizona. I spent so much time in Arizona. And I was shocked that it turned blue. I was shocked that Trump so-called lost it. But here's our do-over. We have a do-over, just one, and it's in Maricopa County where they're counting the ballots. And it's going to be very interesting because when it does show that Trump actually won that, what's going to happen? It's going to domino effect, and they're going to have to go back to the other states and reexamine it. There's no other way. It has to.
That's what we're all counting on. And while you're out there talking, and you know, I've heard you speak several times. The last time was actually here in New York when you spoke at the Republican Club in Queens, where this is in Donald Trump's district where he was raised. So I know your message has changed since then. So before at that point, Donald was still in the White House. What is your message? What is your messaging, and what are you trying to tell the people as you go around speaking?
Right. The main message is really the legacy of Donald Trump. See, here's the thing. Donald Trump did not make followers. And, you know, your previous guest was proof of that. You know, does he like Donald Trump? Yes. Does he appreciate him? Yes. But the difference is Donald Trump has made leaders, not followers. So the thing is right now, what we're seeing is the birth of many leaders. And granted, you could say all the time that, okay, well, this person's just a small person. This person's a small person. But the big boys have come out to play. General Flynn is out there advocating all these things about what we need to do and to inspire us to be leaders. Mike Lindell is doing the same. Lynn Wood is doing the same thing. We even had Jim Caviezel, the actor that played Jesus in Passion of the Christ, he's coming out and becoming a big voice. So what you have here is many of us at one time fighting, the small people out there doing our best, trying to hold our own, but the reinforcements have come. The big boys have come out to play, and there's more coming. This whole start with Lindell, Lynn Wood, Jim Caviezel, these are just the beginning of it. There's other people that are going to stand up in time and count themselves in as a leader in amongst this movement.
This is what we need. We need to keep this thing going. We absolutely need to keep this thing going because, as you said, the election was stolen. We know it was stolen, and I truly believe that when Arizona flips, then Michigan, Georgia, you know, Pennsylvania, all the other states will then come into play. Now, let everybody know, because you've said this before, but we always have new listeners, and I'm so blessed and happy the show is growing. You have to tell people exactly from whence you come, because just like Pierre Wilson, you sound conservative, and you're a Trump follower, and you're going around and you're speaking for God, family, country, constitution. But tell people from whence you came and what happened to you and how the left treated you when you decided to leave the liberal plantation, and tell them, you know, from the time that you became Donald Trump's photographer to the point in which all the disaster began.
Well, one of the most interesting things about it is that I was a darling of the liberal left. I had a big photography company, 25 photographers working for me. And not only that, we were the darling company of the liberal left. We sponsored their events. It was LGBT events sponsored by Gene Ho Photography. We had, my wife and I had an LGBT nanny that raised our children. I was big. I was beloved by the liberal left. But here's the thing. It wasn't me that left the left, the liberal left. They left me. I said it before, but this is something that people have to think about. The wonderful thing about the left, the wonderful thing, is that you don't judge. That's the whole thing. That's why I love the left. They don't. You're not supposed to judge. If you want to hate me, you could hate me, but you got to get to know me, and I can do something wrong to you, or I offended you, or I was a jerk to you. I can live with that. But you don't judge me until you get to know me, and that was the mantra of the liberal left. But yet, basically, the so-called tolerant left was not very tolerant. If I decide to support Donald Trump, then the game's over. Really, if you think about it right now, it's actually switched. The conservative side is the tolerant side, truly the tolerant side. You could believe one way, you could have one way, but hey, that's you, you do you, and I'll do me. That has been the new conservatism. And I have been attacked by the left since I supported Donald Trump. But I tell you what, you know what, at the end of the day, it's all good, because today I'm happier than ever before in what I'm doing and supporting our conservative side.
Well, that's very good to hear, but there's two things within that story that you need to let everybody know. Tell them what it did to your business, and tell them how you came about to support President Trump. What did you see while you were with him on the 2016 campaign that changed your mind?
The easy answer to that is basically how the media treated Donald Trump. See, the thing is, this was really a big thing for me, because I had a big photography studio that, for the most part, doesn't exist anymore because of the boycotts and my photographers leaving. But I had a very big studio, and during that time, there was a lot of jealousy of other photographers. We were doing amazing work, big weddings, big studio. But the thing is, during this time, basically all that I had was left behind because I supported Donald Trump. And then in the process of this, the boycotts and everything, I started losing more and more money. But the one thing that drove me to this side is how the media treated Donald Trump. And I don't like this because when I was running my studio, I didn't like people talking about me and that never knew me. But the same thing happened with the media. I was seeing one side of Donald Trump, an amazing person that is not a racist, that treats people around him very nicely, and the media was trying to paint a picture of him being the opposite. So when I saw that, that drew me closer to Donald Trump. And you know what? The other thing about it is, and probably the most important thing is, during this time, I was crushed. I was crushed financially. I was being audited by the IRS. And faith grows in darkness. And it was during this time,
amen,
right when this happened, that my wife and I decided to dedicate our lives to Jesus. And people say all the time, well, oh, your wife, she was already a Christian. You know what? There's a difference between professing your faith and living your faith and really, truly dedicating your life to Jesus. And today, we feel amazing because of the decision that we have made.
Gene, I know how you feel because this is what happened with me. He's turned my life around. And although I lost all the friends I had from my past, I've gained new ones like you and Claire Lopez and all kind of people. You know, just throwing a couple names out of guests that I've had on the show that I've had developed relationships with. It's a wonderful thing because you'll be put in touch with and given a support system of like-minded people. Now, you're running for mayor of a Long Islander. He's from up here, up in my neck of the woods.
Yeah.
Running for mayor of Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Please tell people why you decided to jump into the throw your hat in the political arena in that respect.
Well, you know what? I spent 2 years on the road telling people, hey, you got to do your part. We don't know what your part is. You can only decide for yourself, but you got to do your part. And so I, saying that, I said, well, what is my part into this? And to be honest, this is the truth. Nobody really wants to run for political office. I know Donald Trump did it. He says, I'd rather not. I mean, really, if you think about it, who really wants to do this? To go in there and have people that used to love you now suddenly hate you, to have people out there telling lies about you? No one really wants to do this. But it is really our obligation to God, all of us, to ask ourselves, what did we do during this time period? And I can look back 5 years later, 10 years later down the road, I can look at my children in the eye and say, listen, I did this, even though it's not the most comfortable thing in the world, running for political office. But we all have to ask ourselves, what could we do to make America great?
Absolutely. And this is why I do what I do. I do this for God, family, country, Constitution. It's something I never thought I would do. In fact, this was put into my head by my producer, who you know, James Bostic, when we were at Rock the Red 2 years ago. That's where I met you and heard you for the very first time. When I'm sitting eating with him, Trevor Loudon's at our table and watching Doug Collins, and James looks over and says, Gary, you should have your own show, because I had the Rocky and the Wolfman. You know, I had my little spot on there that you would come on, thank you. And I'm like, I don't want my own show. But as time went on and things happened, you know, it just changed. And then I realized, okay, if I can have this voice, and I told them the only way I'm going to do this is if I can bring on high-profile guests, because I need to bring on people who have such impeccable credentials that the audience will want to listen to them. Who cares about what I have to say? So, you know, it's an incredible thing. Gene, please tell them, well, my final question, and then please tell them how they can reach you and get your book. My final question is, as you go around the country, what are you hearing about Dominion, the lawsuit, that the election was stolen, and do you think that that this onion is going to get peeled and we're going to find out the truth anywhere in the near future?
Well, the one thing that encourages me is that administrations have turned over in one day's time. In the book of Daniel, it was overturned in one day's time with the handwriting on the wall. Belshazzar, I believe it was him, was in control. And in one day, the Assyrians walked in.
Right.
And it was, of all people, by the way, of all people, it was King Cyrus's general that went in there and switched it over. And just going to say it, 17 days later after the general captured it, King Cyrus walked in and basically an administration changed overnight with God's hand. And it's interesting because we all know this. We've been talking about Cyrus and the connection with 45, Isaiah 45, President 45. We've all talked about King Cyrus. But it's interesting, it was King Cyrus that freed God's people from Belshazzar in one night with the handwriting on the wall. So I tell you this much, I see, meaning Tekken Persian, I see the handwriting on the wall for these people. It's right there with Dominion. And all of us see it. And we've been looking for it. And it can, through faith in God and through God's will, administrations can change overnight. And that is why the left fears it so much. And that is why the right is so happy, because we know that at any given moment, the administration can change, just like in Daniel.
You've got that right, and that's what we're looking for. Gene, tell people how they can reach you and how they can get your book, Trumpography.
Thank you very much, guys. Please check out GeneHo.com, G-E-N-E-H-O.com. Click on that. That goes to my website, and you can find the book, Trumpography, from there. And I tell you what, Gary, this has been so wonderful. Been looking forward to this all day. Great talking to you again.
Same here, Gene. Looking forward to catching up with you somewhere. I'm sorry I wasn't able to get down to Naples, Florida. And when I'm in South Carolina, it looks like you'll be out of state.
Yes,
so,
I'll be coming back from Dallas. So.
Okay, so we'll miss there, but we'll hook up sooner or later. And God bless you, Nadine, and the family.
Okay, thank you. I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you. The one and only Mr. Gene Ho, photographer extraordinaire. Everybody, usually I do a monologue, and I usually do it at the beginning of the show, but because of the way the guests fell and that certain people had to come on at a certain time, I didn't do the monologue, and I'm not even going to think about doing a monologue now. These guests were so powerful and dropped so much knowledge, gave mega doses of knowledge, there's nothing left for me to say. So I'm not even going to do a monologue. All I'm going to say is this. God is blessing this nation, and he's not about to give up on us, because there are too many people who are involved. Too many people, at least 83 million, you're going to find out when they figure out the election right, voted for Donald Trump as president. That was the showing that the Lord needed to see, that he is not going to give up on this nation. And you can see it in the things that haven't go on, even though they're in the White House. They're not allowed to come across the borders the way they thought. Southern border. They're not able to take away our guns yet, and they won't, because a lot of states are declaring states' rights and red states and putting in laws claiming states' rights, which will not give the federal government the opportunity to go against the Second Amendment. Okay? There are so many other things you're seeing where Biden is being stopped here, being stopped there, their attempt to want to pack the court, right? Nancy Pelosi doesn't want to go that way. Now, you know she does, but maybe she's figured out, you know, we're going down, and if we change this and pack this court, and then Trump gets in, how are we going to be able to unpack it? So there's a lot of things going on, and the big news, and Gene pointed it out, the big thing is Arizona, the recount in Arizona. I'm telling you, when they find out and prove the fraud and everything that went on in Arizona, and that state flips, everybody else is going to get their day in the sun. And the lawsuits, do not sleep on the lawsuits that Mike Lindell and Lynn Wood and Rudy and Sidney Powell and everybody against Dominion are back and forth this way. Whichever way it goes, I'm glad Dominion sued Mike Lindell, because he's a big boy. He put on his big boy pants. He can handle it. And if that goes to court, all we want is to be able to show the evidence, and they'll be finished. So thank you for listening tonight. I want to thank the guests, Dr. Jerry Newcomb, Pierre Wilson, Barbara from Harlem, Gene Ho, and Brandon Tatum. It was a wonderful show. We'll be back in 2 weeks to preview the Rock the Red convention that will be down in Greenville, South Carolina, with Michael Flynn, Lynn Wood. These are people that will be speaking there. We're going to have a preview show in 2 weeks. So until then, God bless you, God bless your family, and God bless America.